on today's Compassion Radio.
The fact is, the average age of a victim of child trafficking is 13. Where is your kid when they're 13 or 14 years old? I'm talking about minors. So that's an average. All the people that are being affected by this directly are in that age group.
Intrepid.
When God tells you to go, then everything works out. He provides.
Involved.
It is so exciting to see what God can do. And this is why there is so much hope.
International.
Compassion Radio allows the listener to get involved in projects that are going to change history.
This is Compassion Radio.
Taking the liberating power of God's good news and his compassionate heart to the four corners of the globe. This is the Daily Radio Journal that tells of the new ways it's happening. We're glad you've joined us today. We're going to hear a story about a quiet guy who was minding his own business when God gave him what Bram calls his Gideon moment, an assignment to work on a seemingly impossible task. But it didn't start that way. Today, we'll find out what God can really do to a servant of his who says yes to Jesus. And in his case, taking on the very strongholds of child trafficking. As you can imagine, we'll be dealing with some sensitive subject matter today. So you might want to have those with younger ears involved elsewhere. This is a powerful story, and it's the first of a two-part series. Here's Bram to make introductions.
With me today is a new friend, Rick Naylor. Now, Rick is an interesting case because God called him, seemingly out of the blue, to tackle something which seems impossible. But we're going to talk about God doing impossible things to people who are willing. Now, this is your Gideon moment, Rick. So thank you so much for joining us on Compassion Radio.
I appreciate the opportunity, and I thank you very much.
Your organization is called PACT, P-A-C-T, which stands for Partners Against Child Trafficking. Where are you coming from? You are obviously a successful business person. What were you doing when God suddenly interrupted your life?
He did interrupt it. I've been in the technology business for 40 years. That's what I knew. That's God gave me that talent to talk to people and build solutions around it.
And that background is something specifically that God's using now to help you become more savvy with the way that this particular technology is being used and abused to go after children.
Absolutely. Coincidental, I'd say. Huh? I certainly wasn't looking. In my past in technology, I had the wonderful honor of traveling all over the world, in China, in South America, and over in Batam, and islands over there. And I saw child trafficking over there. I saw both sides of the equation. I had guards because I was an executive, so they assigned when you go outside of the United States, for insurance purposes, I guess, to guard me. And so, you know, certain countries, it's cultural. When I came back to the States, I didn't want to travel anymore, and I'd gone to a meeting at our church, at Hill Country Bible Church, and that particular Saturday, I think it was, they have a gathering of all the ministries to find out, okay, what are we going to do when we go into 2015 at that point in time with each one of the different ministries? And I was helping with one called Austin Disaster Relief Network. And so I was just sitting there listening, and some lady got up during that presentation when they went around the room, she was three rows ahead of me, and said she wanted to be a trauma counselor for victims of child sex trafficking. I got up after the meeting and introduced myself, and I said, what did you say? And she told me, I was kind of speechless to say the least, and then she told me that she was her survivor. She's about 40 years old or so. I went home and I got a call from the guy upstairs saying, I want you to stop child sex trafficking. I tried to rebuke him. That doesn't work very well, by the way. I said, Lord, you blessed me with being in the technology business for the last 40 years. I'm gainfully employed, having fun and all that jazz. And I'm still serving. But child sex trafficking, I don't know anything about it. And oh, here's my special card. I'm a guy.
Yeah.
He said, yeah, you're a guy. I need guys to stop it. I need guys to stand up and go against this. They're taking my children. So I actually didn't know what to go do. I talked to my bride about it and we prayed about it and it just remained on my heart. I went to one of my buddies, Darcy Shoreman, who's my accountability partner. We share everything. And I said, so let me tell you what's going on this last week. And I told him, he looked at me. He's one of those guys, you know, you could be in an airplane, the wing could be falling off and you're panicking. And he's going, well, that's going to be problematic. We'll have to get that fixed. I mean, he's that type. And so I told him and he said, well, knowing you the way that I do, I bet you probably want to understand all the different dimensions to it and do a SWOT analysis.
And when you say SWOT analysis, that's S-W-O-T.
S-W-O-T.
And that refers to?
And that refers to strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and the threats. When you go into a company, I'd look at the marketplace to figure out what the strengths and weaknesses that we had as an organization, what the threats and what the opportunities were, in order to figure out how we're going to go position a product or a service or something like that. It was no different in this instance.
But in this instance, the kind of opportunities and threats you're discussing are really existential. The very lives of people that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And if you make a wrong move here, or misunderstand what the situation is, it could cost someone their life. So what did that SWOT analysis look like for you when you started looking into the issues of child trafficking?
The dynamics to it, Ron, were just off the chart. We did do a lot of research. I spent 8 months looking at it, doing interviews, talking to people, talking to survivors, talking to healthcare officials, talking to congressmen, talking to some local city and state people, to find out as organizations, what were they doing and how effective were they? Because the numbers kept on going up, and yet there seemed to be more and more people entering the market in order to stop it.
Let me stop you right there then to talk about what the scope of the problem is and why it's growing now. You did the research to find out what the actual empirical numbers are.
Right.
A number of women, children, boys and girls that are being sucked up into a slave trade that is predominantly about sex.
Right.
But this is about big money for organized crime.
Yes.
Where has it gone from in the span of time you've been studying the issue, and how many people are we talking about, and why are the numbers going up?
So empirically, on the numbers side, 2 years ago when I started looking, there was 100,000 to 300,000 children that were being kidnapped every year. In Texas alone, just last month after a report was released from the University of Texas and the AG's office, 79,000 children are victims of child sex trafficking in this state.
In this state?
In this state, in Texas. There's 313,000 in human trafficking in Texas, all right? 79,000 of those were young boys and girls under 18. They were minors. If you look at the cost of the state in terms of the human trafficking portion, the number was, I believe it was about $600 million. The number used in terms of the health care and taking care of and finding and et cetera on child trafficking victims was $6.6 billion. Billion dollars. Where it was coming from, broken homes, broken families. That is the key element, all right? One of the areas that we have as a nation and every state has is Child Protective Services. And they go in there and they're supposed to fix. The irony of that is all of them want to return these children to their homes.
There are no homes to return them to.
Well, there are and there aren't. A home, by pure definition, if you want to talk about a loving home, loving and caring home, you're absolutely right. There are physical homes, but we're doing the physical abuse. Moms and dads, aunts and uncles, brothers and sisters. So those people were falling out of the system and going into Child Protective Services. And Child Protective Services would try to get them back into those homes for the other side of the equation because there's not enough homes to put them into. The program doesn't work. They want to throw more money at it. That isn't going to work. We're asking the state to go take care of our children. How crazy is that?
Well, we say we don't want that. This seems to me to tie into a bigger issue about life. We talk about being pro-life to the extent that we would give a child a chance to survive the dangers of a mother who doesn't want to allow them to be born.
Right.
But we haven't discussed with any well-rounded strategic statement, what does it mean for us to be pro-life once we protect the child's right to exist? You're addressing the rest of those years, the cradle-to-grave issue.
Right.
For all those children that have now actually somehow made it into this world.
Right.
And you're telling me that in this one state alone, and Texas is a large state, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of kids now that are not just at risk, but are actually already abused by an underground economy
Right. That
is using them as slaves. So it is underground slavery, exploiting broken families, which is indicative of modern society. I don't even know where to start or finish that conversation, but God asked you to step in and get serious about addressing it. So you did the research. What are you doing and how effective are you?
Good question. Talk about an underground railroad and the number of wonderful organizations doing the rescue or providing legal services or providing safe houses or transitional houses and or trying to integrate them back into society. Those are all wonderful, all really needed. but it didn't answer God's question to me. So the stop it part is the whole thing. It's man's heart. It's the darkest part of man's heart. It is the spiritual side that is so dark in his heart, so deep-seated, that they have yet to try to control themselves. Mm. We're not managing that. And managing that is a behavioral thing. We're trying to transform men's hearts to say, you know what? This is no longer acceptable. No longer acceptable. Now, that may sound esoteric. It may sound we're never going to be able to go do that. I'll give you a case in point. You may remember that you could smoke cigarettes in restaurants.
Yeah.
The biggest tobacco companies, even with the warnings that the Surgeon General put on the packages of every single carton and every single pack of cigarettes, said it's injurious to your health. Don't smoke. When you're pregnant, don't smoke.
So the knowledge is there, but the culture is not.
The culture is not. Nobody wanted to do it. Well, not only the culture, you have some of the largest manufacturers around in Kentucky and Virginia, some large manufacturers, producers, harvesting tobacco. And then they happened to hire the best lobbyists that they possibly could to go to the Hill every day to make sure that their cases were heard. They wanted to allow the rights for people to smoke. There should be a law against smoking. They did that for years. Mm-hmm. We had every type of advertisement and marketing thing out there, from NASCAR to, you know, the Winston Cup, the Camel, all that was there. Very flagrant, always out. Every person in Hollywood smoked. There was a status symbol. So you had to go against status symbols, tobacco lobbyists, and the tobacco companies. One day, that all turned around. You can't smoke in a restaurant anymore. And the reason and the pivot point was you and me. Mm-hmm. We said, you know what? I don't like somebody smoking. I don't like the secondhand smoke. They went after the secondhand smoke people, the people that didn't have a choice, the people that were held hostage, the people that were slaves to smoking around them. And they said, I don't want to have this anymore.
You're hurting me.
Yeah, you're hurting me. And so we have to adopt a similar type of, I don't want to call it a code of ethics, shame. We have to go around and tell other people that don't want to hear about it, not at the dinner table, to say, we can no longer have this. I don't want it around. Every business, if they knew that they were next to a house of prostitution or a massage parlor or a place where kids were trafficked, how do you think their business would do?
If people knew about it.
If the people knew about it.
Such a compelling firsthand testimony from today's special guest, Rick Naylor, on Compassion Radio. And we'll get right back to the discussion after this quick word from Bram Floria about how God is moving this ministry forward in 2017.
Friends, as you hear this, Sandy and I are on a mission of discovery to Eastern Europe. So please be praying for us that we'll see and hear everything that God wants us to in the first 2 weeks of May. I know that a whole lot has changed in the 30 years since I last traveled there. And it's not just the unparalleled freedoms people now enjoy in these former Soviet republics. We've heard about and are determined to see for ourselves the unprecedented outpouring of revival on the youth of Eastern Europe. The Word of God is making inroads in all facets of society and is causing a great awakening. As we meet new friends, we'll be reminding them about you, our Compassion Radio partners who are praying for them in their new spiritual springtime. So please, don't let us down. Do be praying for God's work in Eastern Europe. And thank you again for how you give to make the name of the Lord known in all the corners of the globe. We know you have 1,000 places where you can give each month, and that you choose us humbles us. We're very grateful. We continue to make progress on funding each of our vitally important projects and to bring you important stories of breathtaking scope because you make it possible. I can't say this enough. Compassion Radio does what no one else does, and we help those who take the Great Commission seriously. So I'm going to ask you again with all sincerity, would you join us? If you never have, now is the day to do it. Jim Governale will tell you how you can get started right away and help us to remain on the air as your radio voice for global mission. Thank you so much.
And for those of you who are ready to join our vision team with a simple commitment to an ongoing monthly gift of $25 or more, we still have some copies left of Selah's brand new musical release, Unbreakable, that we'd be delighted to send you as a way to say thank you. Reach us by phone by calling 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. By mail at Compassion Radio, Post Office Box 2770, Orange, California,
800-273-9259 or online at CompassionRadio.com. And we'll be sure to repeat this information at the end of the broadcast. Let's get back now to the interview.
If they knew that they were next to a house of prostitution or a massage parlor, how do you think their business would do?
If people knew about it.
If the people knew about it. So we have to build that awareness.
I remember seeing a cartoon about people's attitude towards smoking. And I always hated going into restaurants that had lots of smoke. And you see a guy sitting at a table and a card on the table that says, no smoking section. And you see him in this little cube of air. And then all around this huge pillar of smoke going all the way around his area, except for that one little square. And the caption said, physics as understood by restaurateurs.
Yeah.
And obviously it made the point, which was, this is nonsensical. You don't just say, don't smoke right here. You say, don't smoke where it's going to hurt me. And you're saying now that the issue of men's hearts bending towards the darkest kinds of either perversions or obsessions about sex is not just a private thing anymore, that is spilling over in greater degree towards behaviors that are directly affecting and harming millions of people.
Absolutely.
And so that troubles my heart when I hear that, because it's not something that's receding. It sounds like it's advancing, not going the way.
It is advancing, and it's people that don't want to hear the truth that's going on around them. You certainly don't want to know about it, and it's okay if it's underneath the table and doesn't affect their kids. The fact is, the average age of a victim of child trafficking is 13. Where is your kid when they're 13 or 14 years old? I'm talking about minors. So that's an average. All the people that are being affected by this directly are in that age group. And yet you as a father or a grandfather or mothers and grandmothers out there, they can't control that environment that those kids are in when they're dropped off at school and picked up later. So the deal is, it's not just an awareness of parents that have to understand that the most vulnerable time of these children is when they're in school, when they're at the mall, when they're at the theater, when they're at the store, when they're not even in the eyesight of the parent.
Yeah.
So it really has to come, men, not boys and girls, men have to understand it from this level, and the kids need to be empowered to understand it's happening at their level. Our campuses are no longer safe, not one of them.
Let me hold you on that thought for a second, because if I'm going to advance to the next obvious question is, what do we do about it? And we have to talk what the problem really is. We're going to get a little more direct about that language.
Absolutely.
So I have to caution the listeners as we continue in this conversation that what we discuss, this is not breakfast talk with your children. So if you need to turn off the radio for that reason, go ahead and do that, but get the podcast later and listen through. It's that important. With that caution, I'll ask you one question and we'll roll it over to another program. What kind of dangers are our kids walking into? And ask that question, you're going to get a little more explicit here. I do want our listeners to hear this, because it is a genuine threat. And if it's not to your child because you are a helicopter parent, there is something to that notion, being very careful, very, very cautious with your kids. If you're a Christian parent, have a kind of net of protection, spiritually speaking, over the people that live next door to you.
Right.
There is a virtual and spiritual presence that you represent as an outpost of the kingdom over other children, other families that are right next to you that may be in these dire straits, spiritually and with children who are at risk. So I'm going to ask our listeners to think in terms of not just your own children right now, but those you've met. You wonder, is there something there that I should be aware of and praying for and speaking up for and doing spiritual warfare on behalf of?
You're absolutely right. Every parent, every grandparent, all of us have to pray and put a hedge of protection around them. God's hedge of protection around every one of them. Here's the vulnerability that happens to them. The traffickers can be 5 years as an average older than the person that they're looking at. The average age of a child being trafficked is 13. But the people that are going after them, the traffickers, are 5 to 7 years older. Remember that time when you were a freshman in high school or something like that, and a senior came up to you and said, hey, let's get together, go out and get a Coke or something like that, wanted to befriend you? That four-year difference in age right there, or five-year difference in age, was so meaningful to you, and especially to a girl, that's when they're susceptible to say, yeah, this is a time that they're coming out of elementary school. We're talking about high school right now, when bullying and all that stuff and self-esteem is down at the lowest ebbs of childhood. That's when they're vulnerable. Their parents don't understand them. At least that's from the kids' perspective, that their kids don't understand them. They're looking for somebody to look at them, to help them, to acknowledge them, to think that they're very cool. And that's where the trafficker will point and choose their victim. It will start off by a text message from somebody that they don't even know. On Facebook, on Twitter, all those little things. We recently helped save a 14-year-old that was on one of the social media programs out there. And he got to this 14-year-old girl, said he was 19 years old, said, hey, I understand you're going to this high school and I'm not going there yet, but we're moving into town and certainly like to get together with you. Now, why is he preying on a 13-year or 14-year-old? Because they're not driving yet. Mm-hmm. There's key right there. Because this person will come in with a car and say, I'll meet you, and then take that person away. And then the story goes where you don't want to hear. So you have to understand the vulnerability of our kids is at any place that kids gather, and schools are perfect. When I said earlier that it's not safe on our campus, I give you an example right here in Austin, Texas, at Anderson High School. This school year in September, a girl was raped just off campus. A girl that went to Anderson High School. They called her ex-boyfriend. The real truth of the matter was he wasn't really an ex-boyfriend. He was a trafficker. Mm. 2 weeks later, a sexual assault happened on that campus. Now, with all due respect to our law enforcement and school districts, etc., they said afterwards that everything is safe right now. Well, it's not. There's no way that they can make a campus safe. You can put a wall around it and put barbed wire. That might do it. But campuses aren't built like that.
Yeah, prisons.
So we have to empower these children to understand their vulnerability, number one, so they're aware of it. They have situational awareness. They understand if they see somebody that's trying to come after one of their friends, they need to stand up next to them and say, hey, I don't think this is cool. I don't know what's going on here, but it's not right. It got so bad at Anderson, they put a team of people together, just kids, 15, 16, 17-year-old kids that came together and just say, this is no longer acceptable on the campus. And they put together what they called a PACT ambassador. We didn't endorse it, etc. I did buy the t-shirts for them, though. It was student-led and student-fed.
Rick, I'm going to hold it right here because we need to come back for a second program on this.
Yeah.
And I want to remind our listeners that we're speaking with Rick Naylor, whose calling now is to this PACT mission, which stands for Partners Against Child Trafficking. And he just mentioned that the partners we're talking about are not just law enforcement or parents. We're now involving peers, and that's going to be some of the most powerful influence we're going to have with young people in discovering what the dangers are and how to respond to it effectively, as he believes God called him to do, to stop the trade, not just rescue those who have been affected by it. So I'm going to come back to tomorrow's program and welcome Rick back for another discussion on how peers, parents, and police are working together to make that difference now. Rick, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it at the time.
Here's some information on our much-anticipated May project. In the country of India, Christianity has grown by millions in the past 20 years. But for all the good preaching and brave missionaries, in many places, something is holding them back from planting healthy, growing churches. It's not political or religious opposition. It's something much more simple: a lack of quality Bibles. For years, we've reminded our partners, like you, that it is estimated that every Bible sent to mission hotspots ends up bringing 5 new believers into the kingdom. And guess what those 5 new believers need in order to flourish in their new faith? You guessed it, their own Bible. So, until the entire world has heard, there will always be a shortage and a need for more Bibles. And that, my friends, is good news. Why? Because we can do something about it. Where it rains Bibles, the church grows, and it grows fast. And this month's project partner is doing something about it in an extremely cost-effective, Great Commission advancing way. And that's why we are so excited to have teamed up with an amazing organization called Bibles for the World. With your compassion and help, this month we can join with Bibles for the World in their Great Commission mission to bring the Word to more villages and language groups that have never had or held their own Bibles. Each bundle of 50 Gospels of John can be printed, delivered, and distributed for only $25. And full Bibles can be placed in believers' hands for $6 a copy. How many would you like to send to these precious souls? As you support Compassion Radio and our Bibles for India project this month, We have a token of thanks to help you prepare for Father's Day. For your gift of any size, we'll send you 5 meaningful minutes for dads. This small book packs inspiration, biblical guidance, and prayer starters into 5-minute devotions for dads. And by the way, we still have copies of the 5 Meaningful Minutes for Moms booklet as well, for a gift of $15 or more. Reach out to us by calling 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That's Compassion Radio, Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And our website is easy to access 24/7 at CompassionRadio.com. That phone number once more, 1-800-868-2478. On behalf of Bram Floria, Cher Nelson, and the Compassion Radio team, I'm Jim Governale. Have a wonderful day in the Lord, and we'll catch you again next time with more Compassion Radio.